Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, July 11th, 2014. And with me today is the rocket scientist himself, John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I am good. I'm good to go.
Awesome. Thrusters on?
Absolutely.
Awesome. And the man, the legend, and beauty queen, Brian Chaffin. How are you?
I'm very good. I am, as you know, the rootinest, tootinest, naugahyde salesman east of the Mississippi.
And for some people, that was a killer crossover. Nicely done. Yeah. Okay. The first story that I'd like to take a look at today is one that you wrote, Brian. And this is all about the new and improved Microsoft.
Well, the new, it's like you're setting them up for me to knock them down. The new and improved,
I know you.
It's not actually improved yet, but we got a hint that maybe Satya Nadella, the new CEO of Microsoft, is willing to improve it, willing to make the changes necessary to turn Microsoft into a moribund company obsessed with Windows and obsessed with perpetuating the legacy of Windows, and turning it into a company that is focused on finding solutions that that actually work for the future.
Yeah, he's saying the things that that instill hope in me for a better Microsoft, which ultimately should equate to better products for end users, which also means better competition in the tech market overall. And these all sound like good things to me.
What I like about Mr. Nadella is that he's a technically astute CEO. He speaks the right language. He's got a good technical background. I like the way he couches his language and the things that he says. And he does it in the context of being the CEO of the company, and I really like that.
So we should explain this. He wrote a letter to employees. The letter was published on the Microsoft's website, and this letter was basically laying out more or less his vision for the future. But it wasn't all great. Like he talked about how much people wanted to Surface because they can click it to one side and be productive and click it to another side and have it be a tablet and stuff. And that's
like the mullet of tablets.
That's my litmus test for Mr. Nadella. When he can say all these things as you're talking, Brian, but when he cancels the Surface tablet or dramatically modifies it into being a pure tablet, then I'll be a believer.
Yeah, right. We have signs. You know, it's like when we were struggling with exactly how to pitch the title of this piece. Like one of my gut instincts was to go that we had to say that we were seeing the signs, or he was signaling his willingness to make these changes. And then John rightly called me. He said, "Well, what do you mean? You know, willingness." He's saying he's going to do it. It's like, yeah, it's a good point. And the source of that hesitation within me, and the source of that angle, was that, you know, he's talking some of the talk, but he still has to be able to do it. And there's still, and the rest of the talk is still in the wrong direction.
Yes. And then there's my concern, which is, will he be able to overcome the internal structure, the legacy that Ballmer created, the quagmire, with all of the infighting and divisions trying to sabotage each other's products to make sure that they get to continue? And there's so much self-destruction happening inside the company.
I'm remembering what Steve Jobs did when he came back and was officially the ICEO. He canned every vice president that was currently at Apple. Remember that? Every one of them. Brought in his guys from Next. Whole new team.
Yep, but in that sense, he came in from the outside. And Satya is from the inside.
Yeah, but I think if he's really going to make the changes, as Brian suggested, the fight that tradition, he's got to replace some VPs and put his guys in. His guys.
Yeah. And probably even some people from the outside. But, you know, Microsoft is such a big company, and that's part of the problem. You mentioned Steve Jobs, and the thing that I always think about when I think about Microsoft is when Steve Jobs talked about how when you put a sales and or marketing guy, or if you put an accountant in charge of a product company, that innovation goes out the window, because as sales and marketing in particular become more and more important within a company, protecting the cash cow becomes the goal rather than innovation. You know, Apple is a company that is, even in its current size, is willing to just hack and slash anything if it's to make way for something better. And Microsoft can't do that. Under Steve Ballmer, they were obsessed with pretending that anyone cares about Windows and about making Windows the end-all be-all and like one experience on all devices. I mean, this is crazy. It's destructive, crazy stuff that has obviously failed in the marketplace. And for Satya Nadella to get all the change that he needs, I'm not sure how we can do that when almost a third of his company is sales and marketing people.
The other thing I noticed, Brian, is that in my perception, Steve Ballmer didn't put a lot of technical, intellectual pressure on his vice presidents because he didn't have the background and expertise. You know it. You feel it when a senior executive is very technical and calls you on, I've had it happen, calls you on your judgments in a scientific circle. So Ballmer's pressure on his vice presidents was more managerial, more emotional. You know, throw a chair instead of questioning the VP's technical judgment. I think Satya is in a position to exert that kind of technical pressure, intellectual, academic, technical pressure on vice presidents to change. And if they can't change, then I think he'll have enough of them and replace them.
It's true, but does you know, the thing that we don't know yet is whether or not he has enough of a vision when it comes to Microsoft's products. You know, does he have a vision for what people actually want? And that's going to take time to see.
I think he has to be kind of in a transition period too. I mean, he can't make changes too abruptly. He's got to like kind of let things fan out. For example, he might have contracts in place for parts for the Surface Pro that have to kind of, for example, run out before he can cancel something. There might be things in motion in place behind the scenes that he can't disrupt right away. So he has to pick and choose which things he can do and buy some time with laying out this vision. What do you think?
Fair enough.
Yeah, well, it is a very big company. So sure, it will take time regardless. Okay, another thing I wanted to look at is a piece that you wrote yesterday, John, and it was a really great interview about covering how the Mac Pro is so important to the scientific community. So I'd like to dive into that a little bit too.
Well, it all started when I was working at Apple in federal sales, and my job was to coordinate with the federally funded R&D organizations, things like the MITRE Corporation, RAND, and the U.S. National Laboratories like Oak Ridge and Brookhaven National Laboratory. So that's when I got into that kind of support. And scientists were already using their G4s with the AltaVec processor to speed up their scientific calculations.
Oh, and AltaVec.
Good old AltaVec. Remember that? Yeah, that was the big thing. And Apple pushed that really hard in science. Of course, it's all folded into our Intel processors now under the label of SIMD, and the capabilities have far surpassed the old AltaVec. But the point is that that was a powerful tool that Apple had. It wasn't even in the Big Brother Power processors that IBM was using. And then Virginia Tech came out with their supercomputer where they basically used 1,100 X-serves to generate a university computer held together with InfiniBand that could generate, I think it was 11 or 12 teraflops. That was about 2003, I think.
Also good times.
Yes, and there was a big deal about that. And so Apple was very excited about helping scientists get into supercomputing and scientific computing on their desktops. Well, fast forward, and that's when I met Dr. Gaurav Khanna, who was sort of a hero amongst the scientists, because he did a lot of work on helping scientists get their C compilers in shape and being able to download and install and run C and Fortran compilers on their PCs. Because Apple was not into Fortran. Apple turned its back on Fortran in those days, and of course it remains today.
Fortran was old school back then.
It's a major, yeah, but it remains a major tool for scientists to do scientific computing. And got, Dr. Khanna helped quite a bit on that with F77 and implementation on the Macs. And so that's how I got to know him. Then I found out a while back that he had bought two Mac Pros, the new ones.
The new trash can Mac Pros.
Awesome black beauties, yes. And he's a theoretical astrophysicist at the University of Massachusetts, computational scientist, and he's using these Mac Pros in concert with what's called OpenCL, something that we don't run across in our normal Mac life. But what it is a set of libraries that allow you to exploit the 1,000 cores that are in a Fire Pro. You know, the the CPU that we've got, the Xeon E5, has perhaps 12 or 16 cores, and we can use multi-threading to our advantage. But when you get into parallel computing, you want to have fast access to thousands of cores. And in the old days, like Virginia Tech, the way you did that was build thousands of Xservs. But recently, the technology has moved over to exploiting those GPUs. And so you don't have to build a network of cables between Xservs. You've got the network built right inside the card. So these sub-gigahertz GPUs, cores in the GPU, can communicate with each other very rapidly. And what Apple's OpenCL does is provides the library and the framework and the build system for you to exploit those cores so that you can have them all working on a problem at the same time, all talking to the shared memory, all working together at the same time on a problem. And the net result is that a fully equipped Mac Pro with the D700 pair, you can extract 7.5 teraflops, which is almost what Virginia Tech was doing a decade ago. It's amazing.
Out of one machine.
On one machine, yes.
And so whether Apple intended it or not, they've actually made a very powerful and very useful scientific workhorse in the new Mac Pro.
Absolutely. And what Dr. Khanna describes it as is a OpenCL monster. I mean, in his perception, the Mac Pro was designed basically to exploit the graphics processors with OpenCL. Of course, for other video tasks too, for video processing, but it turns out by happy coincidence, the architecture of those Fire Pros allows him to do terrific computations. So I interviewed him, and he described everything he's doing in his general relativity research and how he's exploiting those Fire Pros, and gives some background on OpenCL and some praise for Apple for developing this tool.
So Apple's made what accounts to probably the most useful and versatile scientific computer.
Well, he tells the story of how they tried to gin up their own homebrew Linux box, and they bought the parts, and it ended up being bigger and hotter than they wanted, and it kept burning out components, and they wanted it to be small and quiet, and it ended up being big and full of fans and noisy and hot, and he had great praise for Apple's design of the thermal core in the Mac Pro. So that's one thing that allows you to have a supercomputer on your desktop instead of a raised floor and a rack and all sorts of air conditioning.
So maybe even Apple needs to buy some of Microsoft's marketing people and start promoting this.
Well, Apple has done more science marketing in the past. It's a regret of mine that apple.com/science is still gone. I'd heard some stories that maybe it would be resurrected. But Apple's definitely focused on the iPhones and the iPads. But it's great that Apple continues to preserve this OS X legacy and these special frameworks and tools like OpenCL for scientists who need it, and great that they're producing really cool desktop supercomputers like the Mac Pro.
And I love the comparison of the new Mac Pro to a room full of Xservs from only a few years ago.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It is. And Dr. Khanna finishes with the idea, what could you do with a supercomputer that had a million A7s? Yeah, I asked him to peer into the future, and he said, well, you know, the pressure on technology is in the smartphone area. All the research and resources are being poured into efficiency, low-power A7s, and the coming A8, and extracting maximum performance with the minimum amount of juice, and having a 64-bit system that sounds like it's perfectly designed to be a component of a supercomputer.
Okay, so now I'm expecting someone to string a bunch of these together, give me a cure for cancer, give me warp drive, and give me transporter technology.
As long as the power there is greater than the GPUs we get in the Fire Pro, yeah, that's the kicker.
Yeah, well, I've set the bar. Now I expect someone to do this.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Okay, we have run out of time. So thank you, John and Brian, for joining me today.
Oh, yeah.
And listeners, head on over to the iTunes store when you get a chance, and rate our show for us, because I would love to see some more ratings, and the feedback is awesome. So thank you very much for listening. Everyone have a great weekend.